Opera Night with Paul Herriot.
Randall Shannon, welcome to Opera Night and to Lyric. We meet at a very interesting time and for all sorts of reasons this season. Well, for one thing, it's your incumbent season, your first season as executive director here. But of course, with all those close associations that you've had with the Irish Chamber Orchestra, OTC, Opera Northern Ireland, the Buxton International Festival, which is one of the great, one of the more celebrated English festivals that we all know of course, as well as opera advisor to the Arts Council, you are as well placed as anyone to really put this festival, Wexford Festival Opera, as it celebrates its 70th season, into context, both from a personal and an international perspective.
Yes, gosh, what an introduction. Where do I start? Well, first of all, personally, to be completely frank, as you have just described, there's a lot of companies I've worked with in the past. A lot of it has prepared me for what I'm taking up here. I was, in fact, sitting in a performance last night, sitting at the very back seat of the upper circle, looking over the whole auditorium and thinking to myself about the enormity of the challenge I've taken on. Because we have here one of the finest opera houses in Europe. And the challenge of, first of all, looking after the building. Secondly, looking after the performing company and the keeping up the quality, which, of course, is Rosetta's primary function. But also, Rosetta and I work very closely together. And the quality of what we produce is central to everything we do. If you're not working for the highest possible quality, what the hell are you in the business for? Yes, in opera, what you see is the people on stage, but it's the people around them. There's 150 people in this season. Normally, in a full season, we would have about 200. But with orchestra, wardrobe, production staff, but also marketing, development departments, everybody working together to create what you see on stage.
And I think it's important to point out that, of course, this fortnight that we have in Wexford every October, if we're lucky, and I say that, of course, with particular gratitude this year after the 18 months that we've all been through. But it may be a fortnight in terms of the actual festival as it exists as a festival, but this is the culmination of a whole year. On Monday week, when it all finishes, you start work immediately, all of you here in Wexford, for the next season.
Yes, I've often worked with companies that produce either a festival or a short season, and people have often asked me, so what do you do for the rest of the year? And you try and explain the time, the effort, the energy that goes into creating something as concentrated as this 13-day festival.
And for, you have to plan
exactly,
years
talking
ahead.
We're full into far into creating next year's festival, and we're starting to talk about 2023. And we need to increase that further, because one of the most basic rules in opera production is the only way to avoid surprises, planning surprises, is to plan far in the future. If you think in the short term, then things jump up and surprise you and get you into trouble. It's proper planning that's the key to success.
This is the 70th anniversary year for Wexford. We're talking to you now very much as a professional, but I think it's important to point out also that you've attended this festival, enjoyed it as a member of the audience for many years as well. How do you see Wexford Festival Opera on the international stage, for example? What makes it unique?
The experience. We invite people to come to the town to move in for 3 or 4 days. First of all, go to all the operas that we put on, but the lunchtime recitals, the talks, the pop-up events, and immerse yourself in the town. And what we're really selling is the whole experience.
And the town really embraces it. You can feel that
the town comes
everywhere.
Alive. Yes. The energy, the life that the festival brings to the town is incredibly rewarding, but also people are so devoted to the festival and to the town. I met a gentleman a couple of nights ago who lives in Ohio. This is the first time he has been out of his house for 18 months, but he was determined to come to Wexford. And I've just been talking to a couple who've come from Spain, and again, they come every year, and we're determined to be here.
As we look back over the 70 years, 2008 was a year of key change when this national opera house emerged.
Yes, it was, I suppose, the primary quirky feature of Wexford, that this street that is called the High Street and is just about wide enough for a single car to drive down, it still is a residential street. And on both sides, it would be houses, but you get to about three quarters of the way along the street and there's this wider door and you walk in and you find yourself in a theatre. And so when the new theatre was being designed, they deliberately wanted to keep that same idea.
It really is part of the magic, I think.
Well, it
what
is.
Gives it the personality
exactly,
and connection with the town.
While we've taken away a lot of the houses on one side of the street, we've still kept the facade.
Yes.
So it looks like a street of residential houses. And again, you get to this bigger entrance, but you walk in and, as I say, you find yourself in one of the most beautiful theatres imaginable.
You know, another of the characteristics of this festival that everybody talks about and that you almost have to accept, gear yourself up for when you come to Wexford, is that you're going to certainly learn something new, because so many of these operas are, to say the least of it, obscure, sometimes almost completely absorbed in the mists of time. And so things are being revealed, reinvented, no doubt, The sense of the road less travelled seems key to this festival. Is it going to stay that way?
It certainly is, because we rely... Wexford is a small town. In order to exist, to be successful, we rely on our ability to attract a national and an international audience. There's no point in our putting on La Traviata, La Bohème, because why would anyone come from New York to see something that they can see almost any day of the week at home? So we have to attract people by putting on a repertoire that they're not going to see anywhere else. One shouldn't overcomplicate that. Yes, we've over the years, operas have been presented here by composers that I've never heard of, much less operas never heard of. The bottom line is, what we're selling is entertainment. You can walk in here, you don't need to know anything about the composers or the opera or even the story. You can sit down and read the surtitles. That will keep you up to speed with what's happening. And listen to the music. What we present is not challenging. Yes, you might be lucky enough to come in and hear an undiscovered masterpiece and have a really invigorating, even life-changing experience. At the worst, you'll have a good, enjoyable experience.
Randall Shannon, thank you very much, as I say, for taking time to join us on Lyric and that future. We look forward to sharing it with you in the years to come.
Thank you very much.
Rosetta Cookie, I am the artistic director of the Wexford Festival Opera.
Shakespeare in the Heart is your muse this year. Now, I was thinking about this last night before I talked to you, and I thought, how many can I think of? Two Gentlemen, Verona, The Taming of the Shrew, Romeo and Juliet, The Merchant of Venice, Much Ado in Sicily. We cover the country, the dimensions, the spirit of the place. Then there are the Roman plays, Julius Caesar and so on. What plays did he not set in Italy? And yet, he never went there, so we're told. What is your fascination with Shakespeare? Does he have an Italian soul, do you think?
I think so. I think he's like Salgari. Salgari was a writer, much later, of course, that wrote a wonderful story about all over the world without exiting from his house. Never. I think that for a writer, it's the soul that flies. It doesn't matter if physically goes or not. It's the soul that is flying from one place to the other and catch the feeling, the what that place can be for him. And I think Shakespeare is more or less the same, you know.
It's interesting the breadth of interpretation, too, with the works that have been chosen. Some might be seen as being perhaps a more obscure connection, something like La Songe d'une Nuit d'été, the piece that we're hearing tonight, suggests A Midsummer Night's Dream. Anything but. It's
anything.
Completely different.
Anything. I mean, when I decided the theme, which was, you're right, long time ago now, because it was in 2019. And then, of course, what happened, the pandemic, and we need to postpone. But when I thought about the three piece to put on stage, I said, I don't want to put the Shakespeare story and that's it. I want to see Shakespeare in a kind of 360 degrees. So I wanted to put a story about Shakespeare. And this is Le Songe de Nuit d'été, because Le Songe de Nuit d'été is a story about Shakespeare. 50 years before that Thomas wrote this one, Alexandre Duval wrote Shakespeare Amoureuse, which is nothing else than the Shakespeare in Love.
Shakespeare in Love, the film that made such an international impression.
Exactly, with the movie.
Two decades ago. And where, very interestingly, Shakespeare, fiction meets history head on.
Exactly, exactly.
And that's what this is about tonight, really.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I mean, when I met this opera first, I said, this is perfect. It's Shakespeare that meets his character that then will become literature, will become the best poetry never, read in the entire literature. So I said, Le Songe de Nuit d'été is the perfect opera to talk about Shakespeare. And then the other one, in Wintermärchen, is, of course, the Winter Tale. So it's a story by Shakespeare. And that is really straightforward as well as the Winter Tales. And then the third one maybe is the most obscure. Why I choose that? Why I choose Edmea? Because Edmea, apparently nothing to do with Shakespeare, but Edmea is a very Shakespearean story. It reminds me of Ophelia. It reminds me Midsummer Night Dream. You know, this woman that, because she's in love and her love has been betrayed, she threw herself in a lake. And then she was rescued or not, we don't know. She died or not, we don't know. But she loses her mind. And a group of travelers actor, and this remind me, the travelers actor in Midsummer Night Dream, meet her and bring her with them, So this is a very Shakespearean story.
And it's a dual story in a way. It's insanity versus total clarity.
Exactly.
And that's reflected very interestingly in the design with that
particular absolutely, work. Absolutely. I think that the creative team of Edmea did a great job.
Literally upside down.
Upside down, exactly. To see the underworld and to leave the public decide if that is a dream or that is a kind of another world or is only the minute before or the minute after.
Rosetta, as we have you, and you don't have a lot of time, but while we do have hold of you, it's very interesting the way that you've embraced curation as a theme that runs throughout the art. What comes first with you? Is it the music that comes first? Is it, I've often felt when we watch your work, there seem to be few common denominators. We never know what we're going to get next. We really don't, you know? It can be a great epic thing such as Resurrezione or a much more specialised kind of... there seem to be no limits.
Well, how to find an opera for Wexford probably is the most challenging thing in the world. Because you have to wait a lot of, a lot of matters. For me, first of all, is the music. I mean, we are talking about rare operas. And the rare opera or forgotten opera, whatever we want to call, is our opera that has been forgotten for a reason or has been forgotten because something happened. And I'm looking for that kind of operas, the ones that are hidden masterpiece. And you can find immediately when you play an opera.
Because, of course, you are a pianist.
I am a pianist. So I like to find the old score or new score, whatever, and play it and feel what is the feeling that the music gives to you immediately after you read the libretto.
Just one thing before you have to fly on, because as I say, you are very busy at the moment. But, I just wanted to know, and I'm interested, you don't have to answer this question, but nevertheless, I think we all want to know, in a way, the artistic community is an incredibly resilient community. It has always had to be, no matter what. But after everything we've had with this pandemic and all that has brought, do you think there is anything moving forward that the artistic community has taken from this experience that it will be able to benefit from moving forward, philosophy, anything?
Well, I think that from this time, the artistic community will hold something, and we need to hold something. First of all, what we have learned in terms of technology, in terms of how to deliver what we do, not only inside the wall of a theater, but all over the world. This is a lesson for us, but it's also a philosophical lesson that I hope that the artistic community will learn. We are not alone. The artists are very individualistic, and this is our strength and our weakness, or whatever it's called. But we need to know that we are not alone. So make a group, make a team, will help the arts to go on in this difficult time, you know.
Yes, it has to happen gradually.
Gradually. The fear that born in this period is the worst thing that happened. The fear of not being back in a stage, the fear of being alone. So the devices that we found to connect each other is something that we need to carry on in the next future and in the long-term future.
Rosette, I think it's encouraging to hear those words moving forward, and we look forward to enjoying the magic and the music next year and to moving on with you. Rosette Cookie, Artistic Director here at Wexford, thank you so much.
Thank you, Paul.
My name is Guillaume Tournier, and I'm conducting the new production of Le Songe d'une nuit d'été by Ambroise Thomas here in Wexford. Ambroise Thomas has been very, very famous at his time, and during his life he attended the 1,000th performance of his Mignon in Paris. His second famous piece was obviously another Shakespearean opera called Hamlet.
So he has a fascination clearly with the subject.
Yes, absolutely. He has written around 20 operas, which were very famous by the time. He was a Wunderkind, and he was a fantastic piano player and violin player, and he started writing he was born in 1811. And so he and died in 1907. So he had a very long time and see all the development of the Romantic French music.
And somebody
Paris.
I think once very interestingly described him as the poster boy of French musical education.
Yes, and curiously, his very first music was based what happened in Paris when he was a child. And that was the climax of the Italian music in Paris with Rossini, Donizetti, and Bellini. And you can feel in his very first opera, even in the very first part of Le Songe d'une nuit d'été, that's everything is coming from Italy, in the style. Even the beautiful sparkling duet and the trio in the Act One is a tribute to Rossini. And suddenly and all the operas he wrote before Le Caïd and La Double Échelle and everything are really based on these skills. And he used to live in Rome. He won the very famous Prix de Rome, and suddenly you can hear in this opera, just there is a turn and a change in the second act and third act. French music is there, everything is there, is developed. And it is a key opera in his writing, in his life.
It's very interesting. You came early there to the duets, and I want to talk about those. Those fascinate me because, in a way, they encapsulate the part and the central relationship. And what makes this interpretation of this story unique is the fact that we encounter Shakespeare and Elizabeth I, both incredibly imperious characters in their own right, and of whom we might have very preconceived notions in a way that we might never have imagined, as totally passionate, fleshed out, emotional, angst-ridden characters.
Absolutely, and this is also the moment where in Paris there was the new operetta was going, and you can hear that Offenbach was playing. We took every opportunity to laugh, to do caricatures of stories who were in Paris, and this is really remarkable. The end of Act One, for example, is a kind of pre Offenbach operetta, and this is fascinating how the two librettists, Rosier and Leuven, took the imagination, in their fantasy, the character of Shakespeare and the Queen Elizabeth to build something to laugh about and to dream about. And this is really characteristic of the French spirit in Paris by the time.
When you're preparing for a work like this, and again, it can't be underemphasized how weighty it is. It's a long piece. It's a big piece. It strikes me that you are absolutely absorbed by the subject matter in equal measure with the music itself.
Yes, and it's what is very particular in this opera, and which is probably unique in the French repertoire, is it's a mix of you said it's a long opera, like French romantic opera used to be with Meyerbeer and Halévy, and this is it's not in five acts, no ballet, because it was written as an opéra comique, but it's a mix in between. We spoke about earlier about the Italian influences and Rossini, and it's between obviously something very bel canto, but in between with what will be French music and colors and transparencies and when I studied this music for the first time, obviously there is no tradition about this opera, and which is difficult and probably a key just to have an idea about the character of the piece is how you manage the mix in between all the la vocalita and the French colors. This is the key probably of this piece.
Guillaume, it's been said about you you have within your gift of interpretation an extraordinarily theatrical momentum with a piece like this.
Yes, it is a beautiful piece of comedy, and for example in the trio, which is a masterpiece, the trio in Act Three, and which is like a musical in the 20th century. It's so modern for the time and very unique. And yes, and you have to have the feeling of it's a play with music and not the contrary, and which is very modern for the time.
I'm Hasmik Torosyan. I'm singing the role of Queen Elisabetta in the opera Le Songe d'une nuit d'été. I tried to find the right way to interpret this role, because as the opera calls comic opera, but you have the image of Queen Elisabetta, it's a bit complicated to combine, because it's not the real story, so it's an imagination, it's a like kind of dream. So I tried to find the right way to interpret this role, because, and I can say that every night, even more and more, I find something new. So after the general rehearsal, after the first night, so every day you go to the bed and you think, okay, but this part I can do a bit better, a bit deeper with the meaning. It's really, really very complicated and very difficult to
roll. You've really had to hit the ground running with this coming to Wexford because of the situation this year and coming out of the pandemic and so on.
Actually, before the COVID-19, we were going to do this opera in 4 weeks. staging with the full staging, but after the COVID, so they decided to do it in 2 weeks and semi-staging.
How did you manage to learn it?
But my God, it's really very difficult. But anyway, it was a big challenge for me. Because she's never stopping to sing.
No, she's on stage. It
on
has
stage
to be said,
all the time.
About 80% of the time. I even couldn't
count the number of my arias that I'm singing, the ensembles, the dialogues, because it's really, really huge role. So there is not even 1 second to rest mentally. So you are all the time or backstage or on the stage, and that's it.
How would you describe her relationship with this man, one of the greatest writers who's ever lived? But when she discovers him, of course she's in disguise, she gets a bit of a shock.
Yeah, because she's somehow in love with him.
Through his writing.
Yeah, but from the other side, she knows that she cannot. She's a queen, and so she should stay on her position and try to save Shakespeare as a poet, as a first poet of England. So, for example, in the last aria, she says, "I'm a queen, but it's not easy because you have to be all the time strong, you can't get weaker." Yeah. So, yes, in the end, she said, "Okay, I will be so strong and I will not fall down."
Hello, everybody. My name is Sébastien Guez and I am singing the role of Shakespeare in Le Songe d'une nuit d'été. For my character here in Le Songe, it's something vocally, it's quite strange first because Ambroise Thomas wrote it at the beginning for a tenor and then he wrote it for a baritone, which is in the vocal score, two different lines that we can use as we want. And Shakespeare himself has in this voice, finally, this fight inside him between high notes and lower notes. So sometimes I'm singing very high and sometimes very deep, very dark, which is create already in the voice something like inside him, like, because we can see that he's drinking a lot. The feeling in this story is like he's a bit destroying himself. The queen is coming to try to secretly to because she believes in him to give to him the trust who he needs to be back, to stop to destroying himself and to come back to write pieces who will be for eternity and also to share to the world.
So she's leaving her taste and her legacy to posterity.
Yeah, he doesn't know that she's the queen and he starts to be in love with her. And then after he feels very disappointed when she said, "I'm not your love. I am here like your genius, your spirit, to recover your spirit and your genius to write again." So he feel at the beginning, he feel a bit sad about that because he wanted to first time feel full of love, but she's the queen. So finally, at the end, there is a beautiful, in the dialogue, a beautiful line that I like. He said, "Quand le poète ne chante plus, il faut qu'il meure." It means like when the poet doesn't sing again, he has to stop to sing, to die. And so the queen tried to convince to say, "No, you have to keep going." And yes, it's
a story of, to a certain extent, surely redemption and resurrection.
Exactly, totally. And at the end, of course, Shakespeare start again to write again and to be the Shakespeare who he will be for centuries.
You're listening to Opera Night on RTE Lyric FM.